MX Network production.
EVS Sports brings you a cheeky Brit and an American YouTube racing sensation weekly on the LVK More Than Moto podcast. Here's your hosts, Lewis Phillips and Kellen Brower.
Yeah, welcome back to the EVS Sports LVK More Than Moto podcast. I'm Kellen Brower from RacerX, Lewis Phillips from Vital MX, also here to rehash some stuff that happened at the Birmingham Supercross Round 9 of Monster Energy AMA Supercross, as well as other topics in the sport, including the opening round of the MXGP World Championship in Argentina over the weekend. So first off, Lewis, hello, how are you? Welcome back from Birmingham to Florida again, or another remote show.
Yes, another remote show. Will we ever see each other again? Who knows?
Time will tell. I think we'll see each other sooner rather than later. Did you like Birmingham?
Well, there is embargoed news on the horizon, isn't there, Kellen?
Yeah, I guess so. Mainly embargoed at this point in time. How's Birmingham?
We respect embargoes.
How's Birmingham?
It was okay. It was no standout. I like the glitz and glamour of nice stadiums or historic stadiums, like Angel Stadium. So a new stadium that's very basic feels a bit flat on its feet in my eyes, but it was okay. I mean, I'm not going to rush back to Alabama.
Oh, it sounds like we might be rushing back again, though, next year, right? Maybe?
Yeah, I heard they have a two-year contract. And it does deserve another shot, doesn't it? I mean, I do believe that the rain and whatnot affected the attendance and the general buzz. So you can't make an educated decision off of one evidence sample. You need multiple, so we should go back.
This isn't a topic, but I do feel that it is a bummer that the crowd turnout was as light as it was, and obviously the rain affected it, but because Atlanta was arguably the biggest race of the year every year in terms of fan turnout and hype and stuff like that, and it's 3 hours from Birmingham, and that race, at least on TV, looked light. I think in person you guys said it looked light too, right? So
yeah, it reminded me of the Jacksonville years.
Mm, yep.
As like a race that should work because proximity to moto hotbeds, blah, blah, blah. And yet it's just a disappointment. Very similar to Jacksonville, in fact.
Yeah, that's an interesting point on that one. Jacksonville definitely not a good fan turnout the last couple of years.
It should have been.
I don't know why the races in the South, like even kind of Tampa, doesn't seem like it really pulls in like sellouts. Even though, again, kind of more of a hotbed area of Florida moto, I feel like, over there. So either way,
I would bet it comes down to, if you put Tampa as round two, I bet you would see the difference in a crowd attendance.
Yeah, fair point. But I feel like we've had some pretty heavy races at like MetLife and stuff like that. A lot of people there. I know those fill up the upper deck, but 40,000 people at those rounds.
Yeah. But then is that the difference between the start of the season, the end of the season, both poignant moments, and the middle of the season? We're in the dog days now, where we're far enough from the start where we've lost some of the intrigue, but we're still far enough from the end where we're not quite at the nail-biting moment.
Could be. Either way, if I was a fan in that region, I feel like I'd want to go to Supercross. And I get it. It rained, and people knew it was going to rain, so it probably turned a lot of people off. But all right. As usual, we're going to go through six topics today, two more or less non-moto and four moto topics. And we're going to put non-moto almost at the back of this show a little bit. But before we do that, big shout out to EVS Sports. Experience the pinnacle of knee protection and injury prevention with the EVS Web Eclipse knee brace. For over 39 years, EVS has relentlessly honed their engineering expertise, consistently developing award-winning knee braces. This legacy of excellence is embedded in every facet of the new Web Eclipse, which represents the culmination of their tireless dedication to innovation and rider safety. Use code LVK30 to save 30% off of those things today. Namura also presenting the show this week. Thanks to them, the leading provider of engine components for motocross, ATV, UTV, and personal watercraft for over two decades, Namura has been the preferred choice for premium and dependable engine components for more than 20 years. Whether you're restoring your vintage bike, rebuilding your four-wheeler, or upgrading your new 450 race motor, Namura has you covered. Our extensive line of cast and forge pistons, connecting rods, gasket kits, engine valves, and soon cylinder kits that enhance your engine's performance. Keep an eye out for our new and innovative products in 2024 and beyond. Stay up to date by following us on Instagram @Namura_technologies. And lastly, Racetech also presenting us the show. They'll bring us a fan topic this week. As always, for 40 years, Racetech has been supplying the motorcycle industry with high-quality suspension components made right here in the USA. For modern to vintage, Racetech is your go-to source for suspension performance. And the Racetech fan question of the week kind of has to do with what Racetech has in their little bio right there about themselves, made in the USA. So that'll be fun to debate, Lewis. But let's get into our first topic here today, right into the moto topics over the weekend. Tom Vial gets his second win of the year, second career Supercross win as well, back-to-back off of Daytona. And to be honest, has looked a lot better overall this year. We didn't really get to see it at Detroit, but charged forward in Arlington, wins Daytona, wins Alabama. And you have a theory going with this and with Vial right now, and that's that he and being in proximity and training with, to a degree, Chase Sexton, on a regular basis, has upped his game, and that's really kind of the big turning point for him. So, yeah, just I guess take away why you view that as such a turnaround for Vial this year.
Well, first of all, I am putting my own experience to back up this point. That's kind of why I identified it, why it entered my mind. Second of all, it's not so much training. I believe it's simply the camaraderie and the friendship. Because Vial was very close with the Red Bull KTM factory racing team in Europe. It's a very tight-knit operation. Valentina Ragni, the team coordinator, was like a second mom to him. Mom. I'm trying to make myself better for you people. Mom or mum? Well, I would say mum. Is it mom for you people?
In the USA, we say mom. But there are, as we've discussed in the past, there are different dialects that kind of say mum as well here. So
I don't need to change how I say it.
I mean, unless you want to be from those regions of the country.
But it's definitely not mom, like I just said.
Mom.
I'm trying for you people. Just like
we appreciate it. Continue.
Yeah, look, just appreciate the effort. That's all you have to do. Valentina Ragni, the team coordinator, was like a second mum to him. And I know that when he moved to America, the business-like environment was difficult for him to adjust to. There wasn't really that tight relationship under the orange tent. And I know for a fact that it was hard for him to adjust to. He's got his family here, of course, but that's different. That's not quite the same. So when Chase entered the team, they already had a relationship from the second half of last year. And by all accounts, they have become thick as thieves. Tom also had a similar relationship with Jeffrey. I do believe that just having someone to lean on, laugh with, make jokes with, like just someone he feels truly at ease around, has brought a level of comfort which has been evident in his results. Obviously, he has also gotten better at Supercross, but I do believe that this factor with Chase has also had a positive impact.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
I mean, like, I'm just out here on my own having a mental time, to quote a British film, see if you can name that, one more time for you. I'm out here on my own having a mental time. And I need a Chase Sexton in my life, Kellen.
I've tried.
This is basically an appeal for Chase.
Again, I've tried to hang out with you.
Give me the Tom Vial treatment.
I've tried to hang out with you, so I have tried to be your Chase Sexton. But no,
you're just not quite Chase Sexton, are you? Like,
I'm
let's
not.
Be honest, no. Kellen, you're not Chase Sexton.
I'm not. I really am not. No. But I would
Why settle for Chase Sexton light?
I would love
shoot
to
for the stars.
I would love to debate you on this topic, because this is a debate show. But I 100% agree with your logic here, because watching riders come from Europe to the USA in the past, and some do hit very quickly, but I think back to specifically when Roczen and Musquin came, and they came at the exact same time, and Musquin got hurt right away, whereas Roczen did not, and then he raced a little bit and then went back to Europe, won MX2 in 2011, and then came here full time. But if you think back to that time, Musquin came, and yes, he did lean on the team a little bit, but it was really, if you watch the people around him at that time, it was kind of just like him and his wife a little bit.
Yes.
Roczen was hanging out with Andrew Short, eventually started hanging out with Ryan Villopoto, and not only was training with them and working, you know, on technique and all that stuff with them, but also just hanging out and feeling like an actual American living here and experiencing things and doing stuff and just in general, giving him another avenue or a way to take his mind off of racing and moto because he's getting to hang out with Shorty's kids and do fun stuff like that. So I agree. I think that Tom having someone like Chase as an actual friend in his corner who has not only lived and seen and done all the stuff that Tom is trying to do in the 250 class, but also knows how important it is to pull back and not be high strung and stressed about the championship at all times is massive. So I agree with you.
Yeah, like in Birmingham or Birmingham for the people who support that. On Friday, I spent like 2.5 hours with Chase and Tom just talking about like MXGP, life stuff, and all of that. And I could see it. Like, I was thinking to myself in that instance, like, it was a Tom from MXGP, and I hadn't seen that yet. And also, I was thinking if Chase wasn't here, it would be more like for Tom. It would be more like, yeah, just a bit tense, a bit just not as like friendly. So I do believe that's made a massive difference. And to be honest with you, that time spent with Chase and Tom made Birmingham my number one weekend of my life. So I'm riding that wave with them.
Yeah.
To quote another film, you could say that we were the three best friends that anyone could have, and we will never, ever, 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 ever leave each other.
You're turning into quite the film buff. I feel like you've had quite a
honestly, this,
bit of
we
time
should add to, a quiz segment to this show.
Allegedly, we should. Regardless of this situation with Chase and Tom being friends, obviously Tom is better, regardless of which on the racetrack in year two. And I think it comes down to some technique changes as well for him. And I know that he's done a little bit of work with Marvin, and we've seen some stuff that he's tried to emulate a little bit with that regard. But do you think that he is already making the necessary steps in terms of how to be an elite supercross rider that it's going to take to get not only a 250 title, but transition to the 450 class comfortably?
Well, let me tell you with conviction that Tom Vial is going to be the 250 East supercross champion.
Okay. Bold of you to say that while sitting in someone else's home.
Well, as I said last week, zero fucks given over here. Let me tell you, well, I'm still at Max Anstey's house, if you haven't figured that out. The amount of jokes I've made of, well, you finished second to last at the weekend, so let's not like be too big for our boots. Like, anytime he cracks on me a little bit, I'm like, well, you did finish second to last at the weekend, so maybe just focus on that instead of... and also a running joke is he's gone 2-6-8 DNF, so I keep asking him if he's going to qualify this weekend, because that seems to be the bookie's favourite. But no, Tom Vial will win this championship because for whatever reason, most of his MX2 career was spent with the red plate and leading from the front. When he was treading water thus far in Supercross, battling mid-pack, fifth in the points, that's not a situation he's comfortable with. Having the red plate, leading from the front, managing a championship, Tom Vial knows how to do that. It's no coincidence that he won Daytona and suddenly he hole shots Birmingham. It's no coincidence.
Yep.
It's because the confidence is there from MXGP. He's MXGP Tom again. And MXGP Tom is much better than the Tom we saw last year. And I expect him to basically manage this thing to the end, win a couple more races, rarely finish out of the top four. Actually, no, scratch that. Not finish out of the top four at all. And screw everything I've said here. Let's not overlook the fact that he has just been a much better Supercross rider. Arlington, Detroit, it was better. Arlington, he came from a little ways back. I can't remember exactly what the position was, but he came from a little ways back to get on the podium. Detroit, he was riding fairly solid, competitive in practice. He is just better. Yeah. All of these other factors that I'm commenting on are just complementing that.
Yeah, no, Arlington, he came, I think he was sixth at the end of the first lap, but he was a little bit worse than that. And then the gaps opened pretty quickly, but he made good passes. So yeah, I agree with you. And 100% agree with the sentiment about when he was on in GPs, the confidence level was high and he knows how to do this. Like, there's a lot of people in his class that he's racing for a championship that have never done that and don't know how that feels and how that's going to be in the next few weeks. So I think that's huge that he has in his back pocket that those guys don't.
Final comment from me on Tom Vial. I was pondering this over the weekend as well. Easy to forget that when Tom Vial signed for KTM in Europe, no one knew who he was. And we were all like, we being everyone on the planet, were like, where has this come from? KTM are clearly clutching at straws to just fill a gap until the next guy comes along. It'll be a one-year deal and he'll be out of there. Everyone was just like, WTF. Who would have thought, A, that he would be a two-time world champion, but even more so that this random guy would end up contending seriously for a Supercross championship?
Is he the modern-day Marc-Antoine Rossi?
From would back he not then? Be the previous days?
Rossi? Yesteryear's Marc-Antoine Rossi?
Better. That's what I like about this podcast, Kellen. We always push each other to be better.
Correct each other, yep, and stay on top of all that. So
maybe, I guess, yeah. I don't know, because Marc-Antoine Rossi was competitive in the EMX 250, won races. I don't even think Tom Bial did that. I think he had a second overall at Assen, and I think that was it.
That's pretty competitive, though.
Well, 1 second overall. I think he was...
That's
I know
Guillaume
was,
Ferraz
like,
level stuff.
Well, Guillaume Ferraz is a whole different kettle of fish.
But I agree with you on all topics, so let's try to debate some stuff, shall we? Let's get into our second topic, and this has been the debate topic in a regard to some degree this weekend, because Hayden Deegan had about everything go weird in a single night that you possibly can, from first turn crash in a heat race to throwing bikes down to yelling to running to pits to yell some more, to transferring out of an LCQ, to bad start, to cutting the track, to punting someone off the corner, breaking their collarbone. Like, it's all over the place. But generally speaking, Hayden Deegan has been, I think, just a positive personality to have in the sport. Not necessarily that he is a positive personality. He's kind of got that negative flow about him a little bit. But to have in the sport is a good thing for Hayden Deegan being around and what he brings. But there is a line, right, to some degree of showing too much personality versus resting on your laurels a little bit and just showing what you have on the racetrack, right? Like, that's what we're talking about here today in this debate topic, is should he roll it back a little bit and not show as much?
Yeah, where is the line between we love to see the personality and dial it back? It's an invisible line. It's a moving target as well, because I do not believe there is a categoric answer that is relevant to all situations and all riders. But we definitely crossed that line in Birmingham. But I said but a lot there. I can see why some fans in support of Hayden are just blindly screaming, we want more personality. Why would we want this to go away? This is great. I disagree on the this is great, but I can see the argument that we want more of this versus I'd like to thank 17 sponsors, here are their names. So yeah, I kind of just I've put myself in a bind there, because I've just basically given every side of the coin and not committed to any of them. So I'm going to need you to share your opinion while I continue to analyze how I feel.
Okay. My take on this is, if you're an NASCAR fan at all, which I know you're not, Lewis, but there's a driver by the name of Kurt Busch who won the 2004 NASCAR Cup Championship, and he won it very young. I don't think he was a rookie. He was like 2 years in when he won it, but he did win it. And then the expectation going forward after that was, you got to win it every year because you're that good of a driver. And his brother Kyle is known as being kind of a heel of the sport as well. But there was a time where Kurt Busch went through a dark spell, if you will, of getting into altercations, crashes, yelling at reporters, going to other teams and fighting, all that stuff, and became the villain of the sport. And it was, some fans really enjoyed it for a while, and then everyone got sick of it to the point where it's like, dude, you better change your attitude, because you've pissed everybody off. No one wants to hire you. No team wants you on their team anymore. And he had to rebirth his career a little bit, and by the end of his career he was actually one of the more popular drivers. And the way I look at it in Hayden's situation is, don't get that far. Do not get to a point where you are, because you're trying to be emotional and never not be you, I guess, in that regard, you turn the heel on everyone else. Like, no one likes you anymore because you have burn so many bridges and piss so many people off because of that attitude. So that's where I think the line is. Don't keep doing it. Like, stop at some level and realize that, hey, that was my fault in that crash, or I shouldn't have maybe been as aggressive, or yeah, I did cut the track, that's my bad. And instead of just saying, eh, see you next week, it's accept some blame at some point.
Yeah, I guess the best way to sum up what you just said is showing personality doesn't have to come at the price of professionalism. It's possible to tick both boxes. So the second that you basically disregard all professionalism but show a ton of personality, that's still bad. It doesn't matter. You need both, or at least some evidence of both, to be great in that respect. Let me ask you this. Was Hayden going purely off of instinct when he was yelling at Hamaker in the track, going over to the PC truck, etc.? Was that purely blind instinct, adrenaline, it being in the moment? Or do you believe that at any point Hayden considers the persona, the YouTube clicks, the danger zone? Do you believe that any of this is like there's more substance in this than just instinct?
I don't personally, because I think when he gets angry, it's all instinctual at that point based on what I've seen from him. I don't think that when his bike blew up at Unadilla and he threw it down in a tantrum and stuff like he was at the back of the track. It would be weird of him to assume that someone has a high-res camera on him doing that and he's doing it for a show. The same way...
No, but that's different, I think, to just shouting at someone or going over to someone's pit, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm saying his emotional reaction at the Unadilla thing, I think, was raw, like him. And so the crash in the first turn with Hamaker, I think, again, was raw him. Now, the thing going over to the pits afterwards, like the fact that no one at Star maybe tried to grab him and not do that, is either a little weird, or maybe they said, go ahead, buddy. I don't know. But I think all of it was kind of just him showing raw emotion, and the going over to the PC pits after was just him displaying maybe a little bit of immaturity still at this age, because he just reacted on those emotions instead of trying to stop and think about it for a second. The same way that when in the first turn crash at Detroit, he got up and the second lap that he went by, he flipped off Tom Vial because he thought he caused the crash, instead of saying, I haven't even seen it, so I shouldn't comment on it until I see it, which is what most of the elder statesmen of the sports of this sport do. They wait till they see something before they comment on what they think about it.
Yeah, or not just the elder statesman, anyone with some sort of common sense.
Sure, but I tend to think that it's people with more experience. I'm leaning also on the fact that he is young, and this is his 12th Supercross ever, in that he is inexperienced still.
Yes. Who would have thought that in the weeks after Arlington, the only man in the danger zone would be Hayden Deegan? Just a very poetic editorial statement for you there. I don't know. It's weird. Like, I think the problem is, and I'm like dancing around, I can't even figure out how I feel about it. I believe that that's because none of us really know Hayden, and none of us really know where the personality, where the persona stops and Hayden begins. So I believe we're all kind of just like unsure of what we're seeing and how to digest it. For that reason, would you not agree? Like, I can't think of anyone anyone outside of his inner circle that's like, oh yeah, I know Hayden well. He's
He's a nice guy. I mean, because even if you did, even if you were close to the family and stuff like that, they're constantly in front of a camera. So what is the real Hayden at that point? Like, when does he just like chill out and hang out? Doesn't seem like it happens often, because there's always a camera guy around. I will say, because time is about to expire here, I actually really have enjoyed having Hayden be in the sport more so than I thought coming in, because I thought that the bed bugs, as people say, would overwhelm it and it would make everyone exhausted of him quickly. But I've actually thought he's been better for the sport in terms of a personality than I even expected. And I hope that he doesn't change much about himself. I just think that there are lessons to be learned from people that have gone through similar experiences ahead of him. And I think he will have to learn those lessons sooner rather than later.
Yeah, basically, basically what you want to see is some sort of guidance from Yamaha or Star to be like, hey, we don't want to put the reins on you too much, but just FYI, you don't want to alienate X or Y or Z, so maybe don't do this, this, and this, but continue doing this, this, and this, and this in small amounts is great, but we just want to make you aware of the situation going forward.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, I talked about this in my little post-race thing that I did, but, like, if he looks at Jason Anderson and Justin Barstra ahead of him and he sees how they have reacted sometimes to situations that are less than ideal, he would see exactly how it's ended up for them, because they've laid a foundation of, if you get mad and you start throwing a tantrum and you push someone onto the ground, you get disqualified for the night, Jason Anderson. Or if you get mad that someone, you know, accidentally jumped across you and landed on you while you're the race leader and took you out and caused you a race win, you'd get penalized from the AMA because you yelled at him while he's being worked on by the medics, Justin Barcia. Like, that kind of stuff is something that I think Hayden can go back and look at and be like, yeah, that didn't work out for them, you know?
Yeah, and that's right in front of him. That's obvious. Yeah, the main issue that I had in Birmingham was the fact that he was just stood in the first corner yelling at Hamaker for like a lap. And it's just like, let it go. Like, move on. Like, let's get on with this. Like, it was just relentless. And it was like, still? Really? Like, yeah. Just...
But that's also the emotion people want.
Exactly. So we're right back to where we started with no resolution and no progress.
That's what our show is all about. No resolution, no progress. It should be our tagline.
We just go around in circles. It's like a merry-go-round.
That's usually how it works in the press box with us anyway.
Yep.
So from that topic into our next topic here, which, it's kind of coming off of that as well, because Justin Cooper ran third for a very long time this weekend in Birmingham and ended up fifth, I believe, right? So he has been getting better all season long, and he's doing it about as quiet as you possibly can do it. I mean, there's just not a lot of Justin Cooper hype or Justin Cooper interviews or contact or drama of any kind. He's just slowly been chipping off better results every single week. And it's gotten to the point where I now keep looking at what he's doing as a rookie in this class, and I'm like, man, like, he's quietly becoming a guy that factory teams should be like, is that the next guy we should look at a little bit? When I think a lot of people looked at his signing at Star behind Webb and Tomac as like, cool, third guy. But Justin Cooper is the future of the sport, because those guys aren't going to be here as long as he will be. And he's right behind those guys and battling for podiums in his rookie season.
Yeah, I wrote this on Vital MX after round... It may have been after round two when he didn't qualify. But I already kind of pointed that last year in Supercross, he was great on a 450. And it was overlooked. And there have been positive qualities this year that have again been overlooked. And my greatest fear is that Justin Cooper's lack of notoriety will cause teams to overlook just how good he is and ultimately hinder his career. Because I do believe that's the case. I would bet when teams are sat down throwing names around, it takes a while for someone to go, what about Justin Cooper? And then they look into it and they're like, oh, wow, yeah. But I would imagine it doesn't just jump off the page immediately, which concerns me. Even though I don't know him, it concerns me. But he does deserve, he does deserve a lot. He deserves money. He deserves a great ride. I would say without doubt that the next 8 years are going to be Jet Lawrence versus Chase Sexton. And Jet isn't leaving Honda, and Chase is probably going to be locked into a long-term contract at KTM or somewhere else. So if I'm a team, Justin Cooper is a great future investment outside of those two. In fact, I would say that outside of those two, that may be the number one rider I chase.
Yeah, one thing that I like about Justin Cooper in comparison to if you look at Jet and Chase in the future is I think J. Coop, at least in the past, it hasn't been proven on a 450 yet. J. Coop in the past has always been a really good starter, always been a really good qualifier, and those things will consistently add up to being near the front of the field on a regular basis, whereas Chet has been inconsistent with starts. Chase has been a better starter, I feel like, in an average setting, but this year has been a little bit more of a mixed bag, I think. And so I think if you look at 3 years down the road and you have to say, hey, who's going to hole shot a lot of these main events? I wouldn't put it past it as being Justin Cooper week after week as the guy who they have to go get to win main events.
I don't know if I would agree with that. I don't necessarily feel like Cooper is that much of a better starter. But sure, I see where you're going. I understand the line of thinking, and I can get on board with that. It is funny to relate this to our previous topic. If Hayden Deegan has the 250 career that Justin Cooper has, the hype heading into the 450 class will be insane. Yeah, Justin Cooper had that 250 career, and was anyone excited about his 450 debut? Were any fans frothing at the mouth going, what's this going to be? The sky is the limit. Will he podium? Will he win? No, it was just kind of like, yeah, Justin Cooper's racing. He'll be solid. And again, I don't like that because it's disrespectful. But for whatever reason, fans, the industry, Justin Cooper just isn't, you know, he's not grabbing the narrative.
Yeah. I mean, I think the reason why is because Justin Cooper, you know, he purposely did not race a lot of 450 Supercross last year because the goal was to go in and win the 250 title. And pretty quickly that was impossible. But I just don't think that even the few rounds that we saw him at the start of Nationals last year, people were like, that's it. That's the guy that's going to win, you know, 11, 12 motos this year and win this 250 title. And for someone who basically sat out Supercross with that as his goal, I think that's why so many people were like, yeah, we've seen it. Like, he's a good rider. He's obviously won the 250 title indoors, but he was kind of, not to say the word unfulfilled potential, but I think there was like 4 or 5 years in a row where people were like, Justin Cooper's time to win a 250 national title. Oh, wait, no, it didn't happen again.
Yeah, I agree. I also believe that last year's weird deal, although necessary and the best on the table, I do believe it's A, slowed his progress as a rider, and also slowed his hype, notoriety off the track. So I believe that we will look back at last year as not the greatest of situations for Justin Cooper. Imagine where he would be now if he had been a full-time 450 rider last year, as he should have been. Yeah, crazy to think.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, I think that that really hurt him even getting ready for outdoors, because now we've seen Jorge Prado goes and races Supercross, which has nothing to do with the Argentinian MXGP, and yet he still wins it 3 weeks after leaving here, or 4 weeks, or whatever it is. Like, he did not need that extra prep time necessarily to be 100% ready to go to win in Argentina. Yeah. And if Justin Cooper had continued racing 450 Supercross up until Denver last year, you think that, you know, the 3 or 4 weeks that it would have taken to get ready for 250 outdoors and have the bike dialed testing wise, I think he would have been fine. And I think that he looks back at that as a regret.
That's a great observation and comparison, Kellen. Well done.
Thank you, sir. But yeah, like, I think that that probably is why so many people were so down on Jay Coop coming into this year, because it didn't matter how good his results were in a limited space on a 450 last year. He did not deliver the goods when needed to be delivered at the start of Pro Motocross last year. And so they just assumed now that he's moving up to a 450, there's more pressure, there's more riders on the gate who could beat him. There's no chance that if he doesn't deliver against Hunter Lawrence and RJ Hampshire, that he's going to beat Eli Tomac, Chase Sexton, etc. as well.
Yes, the only part of what you just said that sticks out to me is you said that's why people were down on Jay Coop. I do not necessarily believe that people were down on Jay Coop. I just believe that they weren't paying attention or even caring.
But that's why they weren't paying attention, you know? To me.
True, but I don't believe that people were down. I just think they were indifferent.
Indifferent, which is, sure.
Which is, you know, more accurate. I mean, essentially the same thing, but not quite as negative. I think down carries more negative connotation.
Sure. So to get back to the original kind of topic of Jay Coop being a good 450 rider for years to come, we all assume in 2-3 years' time, Eli's going to be gone, Barsha is going to be gone, Anderson will probably be gone, Roczen will probably be gone, maybe. And so that older core is gone. Do you foresee Justin Cooper as being someone who is part of a very solid new core of Jett, Jay Coop, and then Deegan and Hampshire and those other guys when they get here, even though Hampshire is a little bit older?
I should have put Chase in that group.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, Chase, but he's already here, is what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, if I'm Triumph, I look at Jay Cooper as a rider to lead my 450 program and be the face of it for the next 6 years, 7 years. Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, HRC have Jet and KTM have Chase, so they don't need him, but Kawasaki will potentially have Prado, so I guess that's their guy. I would presume that Star are aware of this situation and would like to keep him in the wings for when A, Eli leaves and then Cooper leaves. That would probably be ideal. But they're in almost a delicate situation there. And actually, this would make a great interview with Jeremy Coker. They're in a delicate situation there because, like, you don't want to lose him, but then also you've still got your stars. So it's kind of a, yeah, just a delicate situation to manage.
Yeah, yeah, no question about it. But good to see that he's finding his own a little bit, because he looked really good at Birmingham, and I think he's only getting better from here. Halfway through our show, big shout out to EVS Sports. Experience the pinnacle of knee protection and injury prevention with EVS Web Eclipse Knee Brace. For over 39 years, EVS has relentlessly honed their engineering expertise, consistently developing award-winning knee braces. This legacy of excellence is embedded in every facet of the new Web Eclipse, which represents the culmination of their tireless dedication to innovation and rider safety. Use code LVK30 to save 30% off today. All right, let's get into our first fan topic, because we're going to kind of have two. I'll use this one as the Race Tech fan topic. And I'll use the second one as a Race Tech fan topic. But shout out to Race Tech, regardless of which. This fan topic actually came from Twitter from a few weeks back, Lewis. And it's from @SportandWood303. And we were going to almost do this a couple weeks ago or last week, and we chose a different one, but we're going to bring this one back around because he actually asked it again kind of on Pulp last night in the chat room while you were on. And he asks, do you feel like moto journalists get more respect if they ride, compared to those that don't? And the crux of this is, obviously, Lewis, it's been a little while since you've ridden. You grew up racing and riding, but you haven't ridden for about 6 or 7 years now. Do you feel that's true? Like, you not riding or racing at this point in time, do you get less respect because of it?
Well, first of all, does anyone pay attention to you riding, Callum?
No, but I do think when I post videos of me riding the same way Steve does, people are like, oh, this guy that like covers the sport also rides? Awesome, cool, like he's part of us, he's one of us.
Okay, well, that's not great. Okay, that's not a great start then for me here. Because I was thinking you were going to go the other way. So I'm very unprepared for a defense, because I felt like you were going to be my defense. And now I have to do that myself. So now I'm stalling whilst I try to consider what to say. No, I don't like... Yes, if you've never ridden in your life, okay, that's a completely different kettle of fish. I raced and rode every single weekend for 12 years of my life, 13 years of my life. I only stopped because I started to go to GPs on every single weekend. So there was no longer any time for that. That's the only reason I stopped.
Okay.
So I don't see why that's an issue.
Yeah. I mean, my stance on it is any other sport, motorsports specifically too, what journalist does race? Like, you don't watch Will Buxton and he's also driving an F1 car that weekend or a sports car or something like that. And if you follow baseball, Ken Rosenthal isn't going to his local rec league and, you know, hitting 80 mile per hour fastballs as well. We're covering the sport, so we don't get as often a time to go ride as maybe we would like to, regardless of if we wanted to or not. And that's because we're trying to be good reporters and cover the sport. And I don't think we need to go ride necessarily to cover the sport accurately at all times. That's what testers are for, to provide us feedback about motorcycles so that we can get an indication of what's good or bad about them. Correct or no?
Yeah, and I would almost argue without any evidence that if, to use you an example, post a video of you riding, it does more damage than good, because people go, oh, he's nowhere near as good as the professionals. He shouldn't be commenting on them.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, I would almost start, I bet there are people that think that way.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So actually, a bit of mystery works much better. Like, in my mind, at least. I don't know if that's actually the case.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was outraged to hear on Pulp MX show recently that it was said that I can't ride, because I did race for many, many years.
Yeah. Me too.
I love racing. I much prefer to race than ride. I was just saying to Anstey yesterday how, like, I want to ride, but I don't really want to ride. I want to race. Like, I wish I could just race.
All right, let's get you back on the bike for, like, two quick practice days, and then you and I will go race. Let's do it.
Like, the last time that I rode, was that the last time I rode? The last time I rode, I had a year off because of GPs, and then just went to a race with zero practice and just raced and realized, and then had horrific arm pump, could barely hold on, did lead a lap, just FYI, and was like, yeah, I can't hold on, this is ridiculous. Like, I have to, and at that point, I said to myself, I have to pick a lane. I'm either fun riding guy, or I'm all in on the journalist side. You can't, like, it's impossible to do both, because as you said earlier, traveling and going to the races takes up so much time. Yeah. So I made my decision. Yeah. And I'm the type of person who, like, I don't do things half-assed. I'm not going to ride half-assed and do this job half-assed. I picked a lane and I stuck to it. That's just my personality.
Quick anecdote. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I want your anecdote.
Okay, my anecdote is I rode at a Yamaha intro probably 7 months ago now. And it was, I had not ridden in like almost a year maybe before that. It had been a while since I last rode, so I was real rusty when I rode at this Yamaha intro, and Ryan Villopoto happened to be at this intro as well. So I went out and I didn't jump many jumps and I looked awful in the corners, but I had fun because I like riding and it's good to get back out there and dust the cobwebs off. But I afterwards was sitting next to Ryan, just we're all just kind of chatting, and I turned to him at one point and I said, does it piss you off, or did it piss you off as a racer to have a journalist like me, who's commentating on you as an athlete, look that bad on the track? Like, if when you were racing back in the days and I went out on the track and I said something negative about you, would it piss you off more to know that I'm that bad of a rider? And he goes, no. And I was like, why? And he's like, because I'm too focused on me. Like, it doesn't make a difference. Like, you guys are just doing your job. And the reason I wouldn't talk to media as often on the weekend is because I'm trying to do my job. And it wasn't that I hated media or didn't like you because you did something that you wrote or whatever. You're just doing your job. So there you go. Level-headed approach from a four-time Supercross champion. Doesn't care if we ride or not, because we're just out there doing our job, asking them questions.
Yeah. Let me circle back exactly to repeat what you said 5 minutes ago. You don't see Will Buxton on a weekend off going and racing in Formula E. Like, that, I don't know where that's become such a thing. And, like, even Mathis, like, Mathis didn't ride for what, 6 years, 5 years?
Pretty long time, yeah.
And then now he occasionally rides. I don't really see that as much different to me not riding for 5 years, 6 years, and not riding now. Like, there's no real difference in my mind. I do think it's important that you have been around it enough to race and ride, like, as a youngster, but everyone grows up and then they have other commitments and other things to do. Like, I don't think it's imperative to my job that I go out and race or ride on a day off. I think it's more imperative to my job that I spend that time ringing sources, looking at lap times, looking at career data, and understanding the analysis and history of the sport better, because that's what our job is. Right. It's the rider's job to go and ride on the days off, because that's how they get success. That's not how we get success.
Exactly. And to the point about, like, if you don't ride, you don't know what you're talking about or whatever. Like, more often than not, on a technique or technical question, I try not to interject an opinion about it myself. I will ask for an expert's opinion on it, whether it is a suspension tech about a technical relation with the motorcycle, or just straight up asking, hey, Chase Sexton, your rider position looks different this year. Is that true or not? Instead of saying, like, Chase is riding completely different on this KTM, and here's why, because I know what I'm talking about. Like, I'll ask them the same way that you, as a journalist, if you see something that you think is different, you'll ask them, instead of just assuming that that's the case. Correct or no?
Yeah, and this is where I give Kiefer a lot of props, like, the most props, and I've said that to many people off the record. He has found his lane, and he very much stays in his lane and works within his remit. Like, he is that rider, and he does have that technical knowledge, and he does know the most about what the bikes are doing and why a certain bike's characteristics are influencing this rider in this way. And he's putting that out there and focusing purely on that. because that's his remit. And yeah. I appreciate that because I believe that so many people in this sport do try and, as you said, well, the opposite to what you said, don't know and try to act like they know. I'll quite happily say I am a mechanical idiot, not just with motocross. My brain does not work in a mechanical way. Don't know why. Cars, whatever. My brain can't understand or can't, like, that part of my brain isn't fully developed, I guess. So I don't try to pretend like it is. I'll straight up say, like, I don't know, but I text someone who does know and they told me this. Or, yeah, I text people all the time, similar to what you said, and say, like, I don't understand this suspension change, but what? Tell me why it would be done and what the benefits could be.
Right.
And then exactly. I tell her and I'm like, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the job of a bloody journalist. As I said that, it just clicked in my head. That is literally the job.
I know. That's why we're trying to do our job and not step on the toes of the people that ride and test the bikes. Like I'm just there to video them if that's what I'm there for and not ride necessarily. But I would love to ride and I love riding. It's not about not riding. I would ride more if I could, but we don't. You and I both know we literally don't have time to do it. Hopefully that changes for me in the future. Let's get into our next topic, back onto a moto topic, because that's kind of non-moto, a little bit moto-ish. But so first weekend of the GPs happened this past weekend, and Lucas Kunin, in my opinion, was the fastest rider there. And he obviously won the qualifying race and probably should have won both motos, at least in my opinion. Maybe you have a different stance on it. But he crashed twice, three times on Sunday. Just found the ground a lot. And this is not unfamiliar territory for Lucas at this point. He's also had a few hefty crashes last year as well. So to me, I think, as you said, going into the season, it's Langenfelder and Kunin with a sprinkling of like DeWolf and all these other guys, right? And I think that we assume that Kunin is the next guy to figure it out. But what does he have to do to figure it out? Because these crashes are quite a lot in a short time frame.
I'm not saying I'm right here, but my gut instinct is I don't remember as many crashes as you seem to be pointing to last year.
But the one that I always point back to, am I right in remembering this? And it wasn't DeWolf, but Kunin had a huge one over a berm. Why can I not remember
yes,
the GP?
Yes. Yeah, Uddevalla.
Uddevalla, yeah, yes.
Me. Yeah, I forgot about that. Okay, but I do believe that. I do believe it wasn't as consistent a pattern as you are saying. But obviously the mistakes at the weekend were an issue and unforced. He crashed two corners from the end on the last lap of the second moto.
Yes.
That should not be happening to any rider at any point anywhere in the world. So, yeah, I long have pegged MX2 as being Langenfelder versus Kunin, with the idea that Langenfelder would be the steady, not steady, because that makes it sound like he's not fast. He's very fast. Just the consistent guy who's there every week. And Kunin would sometimes have the speed edge, but would make mistakes. And to be honest with you, after one round, it seems like I was bang on the money. If Kunin can figure it out, he should win a lot of races and maybe this championship. But let's not forget, it's his second year in MX2. So it is still quite early. No? Do we expect someone to have it figured out in year two? I feel like that's normally a third or fourth year revelation.
Sure, but you have less time to figure it out in MX2 than you used to because of the time, the age rule, and now obviously the world champion rule as well. So like, I think like he just has to start winning rather quickly. And especially if the idea is at some point he and Sasha come to the U.S., you don't have that much time to win a world title then. You got a couple of years in here to smash a title and then say adios. So I don't know. Again, I'm not saying like, oh, yeah, he's going to crash the rest of his career and this is it. It's obvious that he's still young and learning the same way that we just talked about Deegan 30 minutes ago. But to me, it just seems like, dude, you have all the talent in your back pocket. Slow down a little bit or, you know, don't make these weird random rookie mistakes. I don't know.
My sources close to the Kunin camp did tell me in the off season that the issue was still understanding that you can win by a second, not 20 seconds. The preseason race at Talavera de la Reina, I believe, was the same. It wasn't televised, so no one who was No one saw it unless you were there. But from the people that were there, they told me that he was had the lead and was pushing and pushing and pushing and lost because he was pushing too much when he didn't need to. You would hope that Argentina would be a wake-up call. But then again, I don't know if you need a wake-up call to tell you not to crash two corners from the end on the last lap. I feel like that's you should know at that point that I can just ride this in. It's not like he was being pushed to the limit if you didn't watch the GP.
Yeah.
But also to your point about not having much time in MX2, the Kunans are officially slated to come to America in 2026. And I believe that's by design, knowing that typically the third season is where someone figures it out. So I believe 2026 was put down knowing that the third year he should be able to get a title, not the second year, because that would be too rushy.
Sure. Okay. the reason why I'm concerned about the crashing, I guess, is you obviously don't want him to get hurt and have this be a lost year, which is definitely possible.
Well, he was technically already hurt in Argentina because he jammed his thumb or whatever.
Right. But I'm saying he still was able to come back out and race second moto, even though he did have the jammed thumb. So he was okay to some degree to be able to almost win it.
I was agreeing with you.
Yeah.
I was agreeing.
But, you know, if he has three or four more big ones, one of those will result in hitting the ground hard enough that the season's over, which would be a massive loss for his development. And I just, again, thinking back to the people who have made the transition to the USA when they have, you look at Roczen, debuts in 09, fast as hell, crashed a lot, kind of figured it out in the second year, but had Marvin to beat. Then Marvin leaves. Roczen wins almost everything, but he has Herlings win a few motos and stuff like that. So is that not the expectation we should be looking at with the talent level that Lucas has? That, hey, maybe this is learning year, but also there's not clear favorites that he has to destroy in this class necessarily, like Marvin was when Kenny was there.
Yes, I can see where you're coming from, but Roczen won in his third year. You could debate that because he started his first year four rounds in. So yeah. If you want to count that as his first year, he won in his third year. I will count that as his first year. So in my mind, he won in his third year. But what you're saying is that it was a deeper field, so it does take longer to get there in Roczen's instance, correct?
Yeah, deeper, not necessarily. I mean, I guess like there was some very talented riders, Van Horbeek, Frossard, and all those guys. But like,
so
Searle, yep, there you go. So deeper in a sense, but there was clearly a number one in Marvin. They had to knock him off a pedestal. You seem to think
Marvin wasn't there in 2011.
But in 2010, he was. This is year two for Lucas Kunin. There is not a Marvin Musquin clear pedestal guy you have to knock off. So the opportunity, door flung wide open for you to take it by the horns and run with it in year two, like Roczen could have that year if Marvin wasn't there. That's where I'm standing on it.
The Adamo fan has just backed himself into a corner because if you were a true Adamo fan, would you not have him as the guy on the pedestal?
No, because he's not the clear number one. He's not even wearing the number one plate.
No,
but seriously, like Adamo is going to be better than you were giving him credit for 3 weeks ago. But I don't
you make it sound like I said he was going to come last. I just said that he's not going to win the title.
Yeah, but you made it sound like it's clearly Langenfelder and Kunin and Damo's chopped liver. So
it's clearly Kunin and Langenfelder, yes.
As DeWolf won the opening round.
That was unexpected.
So, but anyway, I just think that I'm maybe being a little bit harsh on him, but I assume, like you, we both look at Lucas Kunin as this kid has all the talent in his fingertips if only he could harness it. And that's what I'm saying, man. Like, you have it right here. Now it's time to figure it out.
Okay. Should you not be having this conversation about Sasha?
I guess, but it seems like more people assume that Lucas is going to be better. No?
I would say so, but the speculation has long been, since the Kunin brothers have been around, that Sasha will be the better rider. Similar to Hunter and Jet, it's always been pretty clear that people have been saying Sasha is expected to be the better rider. And I believe if you put the father on a lie detector test and asked him who would be the better rider, he would say Sasha, and it would light up green, indicating that he is speaking his truth.
Okay, then let's talk about both Kunin brothers then in that regard.
Sasha needs to sort it out.
He is crashing a lot too.
But multiple times a lap.
Yeah.
Maybe not that far, but it seems that way.
But that seems like it's a shared mentality with the brothers. 110%. 110% all the time, full stop. No?
I'm less there on Lucas. I'm less there on Lucas. I don't feel like Lucas is as far off as you are indicating. Maybe I'm just misinterpreting the way you're saying it. But I feel like, yes, there is a little issue with Lucas. It's not major.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's major, but my concern is that he has three crashes and loses both motos this weekend when you should have gone 1-1. That is a repeatable pattern. Like, I need it to not happen for like three GPs in a row to be like, okay, we're okay. You know what I mean?
Yes. I guess the way to sum this up is watch this space. If he figures it out in Spain and Riola, then sweet. If he does performances similar to Argentina, we've got an issue.
Yeah. One round in, you still think it's Langenfelder?
I don't know why we can't do the second moto. I think we need to see a mental coach because we have some sort of issue with second motos.
Yeah.
First motos were phenomenal. If it was just a one moto format, yeah, we would be king of the world.
Look, maybe he's just following in Prado's footsteps because that worked for Jorge last year, did it not?
Lagenfelder doesn't know I exist, but I like Lagenfelder.
I think we all do.
I see it.
No,
I mean, every year it's starting to test my patience a little bit, but I see it.
I'll say this. I think that this MX2 talent pool right now is a lot better than probably they get credit for. And I'm actually very excited for what GPs looks like in about 3-4 years with that talent pool also there.
Okay, you're the first person to say that you're excited for what GPs look like in 3-4 years, because no one is saying that.
Really?
But do I sense a tone that you are saying the talent pool is deeper than America?
No, stop it. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying but
there seemed to be a tone there.
No. Okay. I'm saying that even if we have Langenfelder or the Kunins or DeWolf as well come to the U.S., I'm still excited to see Everts and Adamo and et cetera, that group on 450s eventually.
Okay.
Yeah.
For you.
Lewis is not interested, doesn't care.
I'm happy that you're excited. I want you to feel positive emotions.
Well, I was happy that you were excited that Argentina was starting this weekend. On to round two. Final topic of the day. This is our most kind of non-moto topic of the day. Sent in by Jamie Morgan on, was that Instagram that he sent that to you?
Yes.
Okay. So Instagram from Jamie Morgan, at Jamie Morgan, whatever it is. Shout out to Race Tech, by the way, as well. For 40 years, Race Tech has been supplying the motorcycle industry with high quality suspension components made right here in the USA for modern and vintage. Race Tech is your go-to source for suspension performance. And Jamie Morgan says, Lewis, great work as always, mate. Now LVK topic.
I didn't realize you were going to read out the full message.
Oh yeah, we are. We're going in deep.
Again, probably wasn't expecting this. So
okay,
sorry,
well, then I won't read out the full thing. But he did say, great job.
No, please read out the part where he says you're the worst person to ever grace the planet.
Says Kellen's the worst person ever. And it basically just said that Americans talk about made in the USA and seems to be something that we talk about a lot. Like, we're prideful in the fact that stuff is made in the USA. And was curious my opinion on it and your opinion on it and why Brits don't also feel that way about stuff that's made in the UK. So yeah,
isn't there a song called "Made in the USA" as like the lyrics?
There's "Born in the USA" by Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, that is the song that I have in my head. I was thinking that instead of "Born," it was "Made."
Yeah, you could sing it that way if you want.
I'm not singing. Honestly, and this may get me some insults. Aside from Triumph, I don't know anything else that was made in the UK.
Nothing.
Nando's, I suspect.
We're back on that.
Greg's. Greg's sausage roll is a UK invention like no other. Pubs, okay. I guess. English pubs, I guess.
Pubs, yeah.
I, me, Ben Watson. Yeah. So that goes to show the amount that Made in GB is pushed out there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily feel like I'm that prideful about, oh, it's made in the USA. That's amazing. But I think the general sentiment from the American public, and this has nothing to do with Moto in this regard, is there's been so many outsourced jobs and so much stuff that's made in China, made in Thailand or something like that, that if things were operationally done correctly, could be made in the USA and that could bring new jobs or more jobs to the USA. That's what people like to hear. They like to hear that there is an American company that is producing stuff in America, which means there's more Americans that are also working for them and thus making a living off of this company, as opposed to blank company sources everything out to China and then sells that product back to Americans.
So you don't care, but you understand why other people care.
I mean, it's not that I don't care. I, of course, wish that more Americans had opportunities to, you know, work in these factories as well.
Okay,
I guess,
but put it this way. I have an iPhone. That's not a good example. Hold on, let me. Please hold. Put on some hold music. I have a car that's made in the USA by Andrew. It's X price and it's very good. I have another car which was made by, you know what? Not going to say a name. X person in China. Smart of me there. X person in China. Same price as the American one. Same features, just as good. Both, all of the reviews say they're both 10 out of 10. Are you specifically going to make a beeline for the made in the USA one?
Me personally?
Yes.
Not necessarily specifically. I think I would do a lot of research, especially for a car. Like if you're talking about like a freaking pot or something, like a vase was made in the USA versus China and it's the same price.
Okay, sorry. I thought you meant pot as in drugs. I was going to say
like a potted plant.
We were on different wavelengths there. I didn't know if you were allowed to take the podcast in that direction. But okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I get my cannabis from...
I don't know that I necessarily buy into that as much as other Americans do in terms of it has to be all American-made stuff. But Americans do like their American brands, like their American beers for the most part, American vehicles. I think that's also a pride thing as well, the same way that we tend to be very, you know, heavy favorite for American riders when they go race in Europe or, you know, donations or something like that. Like they support them because they're prideful of it, the same way that when you drive around here, there's American flags everywhere. It's a pride thing as well.
Hence why me being English hasn't exactly gone down the greatest in the YouTube comments. Hello, YouTube comments. Hope you're having a great day. Actually, I feel like that is an interesting point to mention. Anyone who doesn't know, in America, you drive down the street in any part of the country and there are houses upon houses with a massive American flag out front hanging from the roof or the window or whatever. And it's very normal and like looked at as positive. Right, Kellen? You don't turn up your nose.
No.
Yep. Right. In the UK, if you have a Union Jack hanging outside your house, you are a twat. That's basically the... And I don't believe the Americans are. I actually feel like the American is quite cool because I understand the different psychology here. The psychology in the UK is if someone has a Union Jack flying outside their house, they are a twat.
Is that...
That's scummy.
Just trying to understand the UK side of it a little bit. Do the people that hang the Union Jack, do people look at them as like shills for the government and that's why they don't like
them? No. It's nothing to do with that. It's just not something you do. Like, it's so uncommon.
Interesting.
That it's so uncommon that when you see one, you're like, ugh.
Okay.
Like, why are they doing that? Ugh. Like, you turn up your nose a little bit.
Yeah, because I'm just asking because, like, the American thing, it's because I love my country. That's what people are saying when they hang the American flag. So you guys don't like people that say, I love the United Kingdom?
Well, that doesn't really happen. That doesn't really happen. Like, the national anthem in the UK isn't as big a deal as the national anthem in America. The national pride is just nowhere near on the same scale. Of course, British people cheer for Britain in the World Cup or at the Nations or whatever. But I think America versus the rest of the world, American national pride is way, 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 way higher than any other country anywhere else. But I think that specifically the UK is nearer the bottom of that list of like where it's, you know, where it's a common thing to be like, I love the UK. Like, yeah, people don't hate it, but they just don't talk about it. It's not really advertised.
Yeah. So bottom line, you don't care about made in the UK. You don't want to buy Aston Martin.
Was made there.
No.
Well, that's quite expensive, Kellen.
Yeah, you don't want to buy a Mini?
Was that made in the UK? I guess so. McQueen, she was good.
The Queen?
She was made in the UK. Greg's sausage roll, Nando's, great UK. You know what? Nando's is Portuguese or something, or Zimbabwean or something. So we can't even claim that.
Those are definitely the same thing, by the way. Portugal, Zimbabwe, like, honestly, you couldn't tell them apart.
I think it's Brazilian Zimbabwe cross. Hold on, I'm just Googling it.
Okay.
I know everyone cares. Most people don't even know what Nando's is, but... Yeah. But Nando's again, originated in South Africa.
There you go. So not Zimbabwe or Brazil or Portugal. South Africa.
Zimbabwe not South Africa?
I thought Zimbabwe is its own country in Africa.
Okay, please hold. I'm going to break out to Google again.
Okay. But yeah, just to get back to the topic that Jamie Morgan had, like, I think, you know, made in the USA, it has two connotations. It's a pride thing, and also it's a economic stability thing. If you have more jobs in the USA for American people versus outsourcing it, you're providing goods for Americans and providing jobs for Americans instead of only goods. That's why people are behind that, I guess.
Zimbabwe is a landlocked country in South Africa. So technically, I feel like we were both right, because if Nando's originated in South Africa, kind of could mean Zimbabwe, but also your point was correct also. So look at us, points all around.
Yeah, points all around. That's how this show works sometimes, points all around. That's all of our topics today, though. Lewis, thank you for joining me remotely again. Are you back next week?
Back next week, obviously. This is only a convenience move for basically the longest flight.
Even after Seattle, though?
Yeah, I'm done. I live in California. I'm not... Okay. Yeah, I'm done with this. This is just a... convenience move.
Been away for a long time, good sir. Have fun.
2 weeks.
Have fun in Indy. I will then see you here next week.
Yes, that sounds good. I'm a bit concerned, actually, Kellen.
Why?
I feel like this show has been a little looser, and we've almost gone back to our roots of episode one, where I got a lot more hate than the recent episodes. So consider me full of trepidation.
Okay. Well, I feel like I have. I feel like I have tried my hardest to have much harder opinions and stances on stuff to suffice for the fact that you've been attacked. So hopefully people attack me as well.
Well, I've got bad news for you, Kellen. Your hot or cold topic from last week did not go down well in my DMs.
Which one was that again? Oh, the weather?
Yep.
Why?
I don't know. People hated it.
Hated the topic or hated...
The topic.
Okay, yeah.
So technically, you were still unscathed, but the topic, I got a lot of phone calls and texts saying, what the fuck was that?
You know what's funny is I don't get many DMs anymore, so apparently you're taking all of it, including including people thinking you are me.
Yeah, we had that at a weekend. Someone said to me, hey, Kellen, did you have a good day? And I was like, oh, fuck my life.
See, that's what you have going for you, though. You have a very distinct aura, and so that people think this show is just all you.
It'd be great if someone came up to me and went, hey, Chase, how was your race? Oh.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Shout out to EVS Sports, Nomura, and Racetech for backing the show. Lewis, thanks for joining me. And we'll see you guys next week to rehash things from Indianapolis.